Good evening and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Our weekly conversations always include you, and if you'd like to join us, the phone lines are open. Here are the numbers. From Oahu, you reach us at 941-3689, and from the neighbor islands, or if you're listening to the live stream on the mainland or someplace else, you can get to us too. That number is 877-941-3689. For 15 years, Hawaii's medical marijuana law frustrated those who it was meant to help. With no dispensary system in place, patients who couldn't grow their own often had to resort to sometimes dubious means to get their meds, or if they could get it from their caregivers, they got it from them. Now it seems that those days won't be the prevailing condition for much longer. With the passage of House Bill 321, dispensaries could be up and running as soon as next summer. How we get there from here is still evolving. Tonight, we'll talk about getting there and what happens in the interim. Joining me tonight is Representative Della Albalotti. She represents District 24, the Makiki, Tatlas, McCully, and Papakolea communities. She was a major force in passing the bill, albeit not without political fireworks. Rafael Kennedy also joins us in the studio. He is the executive director of the Drug Policy Forum of Hawaii. The nonprofit was founded in 1993 to educate policymakers and the rest of us about effective ways of addressing drug issues in Hawaii. It has advocated for a safe and legal way for patients to access their medicine since the program was created 15 years ago. It was also represented on the task force whose recommendations served as the basis for HB 321. And joining us by phone tonight is Dr. Charles Webb. He is an urgent care physician in Kailua Kona. He's also the founder of the MUM Clinic and a longtime advocate for medical cannabis. Thank you all for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Bethan.
Thank you.
Well, you know, despite the fact that we've had 15 years to look at this, and a session that was filled with fireworks and discussions of how this bill would be crafted and what we might see at the end of it, now it's here. The governor gives every indication that he is going to go along with it. And now people are looking at, well, now what? So in looking at the now what of this bill, I'd like to take it apart a little bit and really give our audience a chance to ask questions. So if you have a question about what will go on from here to hopefully when the dispensaries will be opening their doors next summer, now's the time to call 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. So let's talk about the bare bones of the bill just to give people the same foundation. Rep. Albalotti, would you do that?
Sure. So bare bones, we are allowing for 8 dispensary licenses in the state, 3 on Oahu, 2 on Big Island, 2 on Maui County, and 1 on Kauai. Each of those licenses will be entitled to up to 2 production centers at which they can have up to 3,000 plants each. And then those dispensary licenses will also have up to 2 retail dispensing locations. Dispensary licensees will only be able to cultivate and transport within a county. There will be no inter-island transport, and they will be able to dispense marijuana as well as manufactured marijuana products.
Rafael Kennedy, as you hear the bare bones of this, was there anything that was significant that you thought was left out?
Well, let me start by saying that we're very enthusiastic that we were able to be part of getting this bill passed, and there are many, many excellent features of the bill. There are certainly some things that are not perfect. And, you know, there's a saying among people that work at the Capitol that there's no such thing as a perfect bill. We would really have liked to see a bill that didn't impose vertical integration, which is sort of an industry term, meaning that the dispensary and the grow – the producer are all sort of contained in one entity. There may be some room for that, for flexibility on that issue going forward, but we were certainly advocating for a system where that let growers specialize in what they knew how to do and let people that could work a retail operation do what they knew how to do best.
Dr. Webb, come into the conversation here. As you have been looking at this bill and others like it for many, many years, does this bill pass muster with you?
Yes, I agree. There's no such thing as a perfect bill, but I'm just ecstatic that we're going to get dispensaries. It can always be improved later, perhaps by including more small growers and giving them an opportunity to participate in the program. I want to really thank your other members here. Representative Albalati was wonderful. I came over and testified in front of the House Committee last year, and she understood immediately the need for this and fought very hard for it despite some tacit roadblocks from a certain senator. And Raphael Kennedy has worked tirelessly for this also, so I'd really like to thank them as well as PBS. But I'm happy that it's starting. We have many elderly patients who will certify and say they have cancer or something, and then I say, where do I get my medicine? And the sad thing is, there's no way to provide it for them. It's up to them to find it through friends or someone who might grow for them. It's very difficult.
Dr. Webb, how many patients do you have where this is really an issue for them?
I really don't know, but I would guess it's probably 100 or 200.
Out of the 13,000 or so statewide?
Yeah, I don't have the 13,000 patients, obviously, so there are a lot of people that this is an issue for.
And at least these are the ones that we know right now. There may be many others that will self-identify as we move through, potentially. But now, as you look at how the bill will roll out as it does, what are you going to do in the interim, in the next year? Are you starting to educate your patients a little bit about what this bill means to them?
Oh, yes. I mean, everybody asks about it. It's in the news, and people are asking, and I tell them to look up the bill and read it themselves because the rumors are kind of crazy flying right now.
I mean, that's a very good point. I mean, the idea of that you actually have to sit down and read the bill for yourself as to to what it may or may not mean for you, as opposed to just trying to get cliff notes from somebody else, that's going around a lot. We've gotten those calls, too, and I'm sure that both my guests have gotten calls like that, too. Would that be so, people asking you, just explain it to me?
Yes, and the most common worry is that patients will lose their grow rights, but from my reading of it, they will not lose their grow rights. It looks as if those will be maintained, and that eventually the dispensary will take over for caregivers who are growing for other people.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, people have to find their own caregiver, which is not easy unless you have a trusted family member or someone who's really willing to do this and go out on a limb for you.
And that's going to be the case until the dispensaries actually open.
Yes, and probably for, yeah, exactly.
Is that tough for some of your patients, you know, to deal with when, you know, they've been waiting for this for such a long time? Now it looks like there's going to be a dispensary system, and they know that they're still going to have to do what they've been doing?
Yes, but most people are very happy that things are working now, that it looks like there's some light at the end of the tunnel here, and most people eventually find their medicine, but it just is not easy, and it makes some people feel as if they're criminals. And why can't they be treated like ordinary patients? This is the safest pain medicine known to humanity. There's never been a documented fatality from it. And our other pain options are very dangerous. There's something like 100 people a day die from prescription overdoses, mostly pain medications such as OxyContin and methadone.
All right, Dr. Webb, stay with us. I want to bring Representative Albalati and Raphael Kennedy back to the conversation, too. As we talk about understanding the bill, that also presumes understanding the need for the bill. Do you think that most people really do understand that for people with chronic pain, people who are dealing with cancer, debilitating conditions, that this really, truly is medicine? Have we gotten over that hurdle?
I think we have in the legislature, and I can say for myself personally in this one-year journey of working with this bill, the numbers of people who have come up to me, and even just in the last week, parents with epileptic children, cancer patients, and they are just so thankful. It's a little disappointing that we had to tell them they've got to wait another year, but I think that real need is out there, and people understand that.
Yeah, and I think certainly among the public that I've interacted with as well, there's certainly been a growing understanding that this is a real medicine that real patients need. You know, and we're seeing less of this kind of assumption that patients are just trying to get recreational marijuana. I think people
the cynical attitude.
Yeah, people are starting to see that this is a legitimate medicine, and I think certain national media has really shined a light on that recently.
And also in films. We've seen several films come out over the last 5 years, especially documentaries dealing with some of that.
Certainly.
All right. If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone lines are open, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Tonight, we're taking a look at the medical marijuana dispensary bill and what it means, how we get between here or from next summer as we look at the time that they should hopefully be rolling out, and that's a big thing to say hopefully, but that's a big if. We'll see how that goes, but what that means for you and also how you are able to handle your life and your pain and your potential chronic situations. If now you're using medical marijuana, we want to hear from you too. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Harold calling us from Waimea. Aloha, Harold. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi there, Bethan. My story is I have no cartilage in my right hip and my right shoulder, and I was eating morphine for 34 years, and this friend of mine turned me on to this tincture made with marijuana and food-grade glycerin, and within a month, I'm off morphine, and the pain's not as bad. I can deal with it.
And so how are you getting this tincture? Is it something you're making yourself?
I make it myself. I grow my own, and I make it myself. All you do is you put the glycerin with the weed, and you let it sit for 60 days, stirring the bottle once every day. And day 61, you have your medicine.
And that's presuming, of course, that you can grow your own.
Yes.
Well, lucky for you, you are, and I'm glad it's working for you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Harold. Thanks for sharing your story. Our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. We're talking about medical marijuana, what happens with the dispensaries as they roll out, hopefully next summer, but getting between here and there and what the bill really means, well, that's what we're talking about tonight. Have you read the bill? Have you really read the bill? That seems to be a question a lot of people are asking, certainly questions that we tell. Go ahead.
I'd like to jump in here with some dates in the bill that are really important. So one of the things that's going to be happening this summer is that the Department of Health is going to be engaged in interim rulemaking. And they've already begun that process, but it's going to cover things from application criteria, evaluation selection process for the dispensary licenses, testing, regulations, compliance, laboratory. So a whole set of things.
But they have to be able to hire some new people to do that. They don't have staff now to do that.
Exactly. So that's another immediate thing that's on their horizon. They're going to adopt these rules by January 4th, and we in the bill have said that they're going to accept applications between January 12th and January 29th, 2016, and they would be announcing licenses by April 15th, 2016. Another date is that the dispensaries, once licensed, may be able to start dispensing as early as July 15th, 2016. So that's going to be the first time that any dispensary will actually be open dispensing. In between all of this hiring folks, drafting rules, the other thing the Department of Health is going to have to do is identify a seed-to-sale tracking vendor that can help with all of the tracking that's going to have to occur between production centers and dispensaries. So that's another parallel track that they're going to be working on.
So let's take this apart a little bit, because when people think about a dispensary that may be open by the middle of July next year and not really having to back engineer all the things that happen or have to happen before they're able to buy their medical marijuana, or who in fact is going to be growing it. You must be getting a lot of inquiries from organizations both within Hawaii and I would imagine outside of it asking, how do we do this?
And I think the easy answer to that is to say we have to wait for the rules. That's why that January 4th, 2016 date is critical. But at the same time, there's enough prescription in the bill that anyone who's really interested, any individual or entity that's interested in applying, can take a look at the bill and begin to see what are going to be the minimum requirements. So things like having a business with a certain amount of financial resources, an individual who has to be a resident of the state for 5 years. There's a lot of prescription in the bill that people need to look at if they are interested, in fact, in becoming part of the pool that's going to be applying for the licenses.
And they certainly are going to have to show the wherewithal and bank statements, a year's worth.
They're going to have to show a lot. They're going to have to show financial ability. They're going to have to show business ability. They're also going to have to show capability in providing and meeting the needs for the patients who are going to be coming to them. You know, a recent question I have received is, well, we have 13,000 patients. You're going to see an increased number of patients. Are we going to have enough dispensaries? Well, that's going to be part of the application process. How are you going to meet the need that's going to be there? Will you? What kind of production center are you going to have? What kind of grow facility are you going to have? What is the transport going to look like? How are you going to manufacture those things? All of those things are business considerations that people who are interested in this industry have to start, like you say, back engineering and start gearing up if they want to become serious applicants in January.
Rafael, as you are also talking to people who are asking you questions about this, the idea that someone would have to grow it and produce it, that could happen in separate places. Are you getting any indication from people that they might want to create a co-op or some sort of group where you have caregivers now who may be suppliers, but that they're also looking at potentially doing this more formally?
The truth is that I try not to get too involved in the details of what individual people's plans are. I think that there are a lot of people, both locally and on the mainland, that really want to get involved. And I think, you know, we have a unique community and a unique climate and a unique set of circumstances here on the islands. And I think there are certainly many people locally that can and should get involved, but we'll see.
One thing we put into the bill, because we were sensitive to the notion of vertical integration, maybe shutting out some of our unique players in the system, is that in the definition of medical marijuana production center, we do say that they can be subcontracted, as well as the retail dispensing location could be a subcontract to the main licensee. So there is enough, again, flexibility in the bill to allow people who have a business interest, if they truly are interested in this, they need to read the bill to see what the parameters are and then wait for those January 4th, 2016 interim regulations to see how they can move forward.
If you're just joining us tonight on Town Square, we're taking a look at the medical marijuana dispensary bill, breaking it down, what it means as we move toward the date that a dispensary might be able to open. Might is the operative word, because we don't know what's going to happen in the next year or so as businesses are readying, and certainly the Department of Health has to do what it needs to do. What big questions do you have about the medical marijuana dispensary bill, particularly if it means something to you and your life and how you're able to cope between now and then? We would gather pretty much as you've been doing, but what does it mean for you as you look ahead in the next 14, 16 months? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. There has been some consternation about what happens to caregivers. A lot of these people who, up until this moment and for the foreseeable future, will be somebody's conduit to Metapot, because that's the only way they're able to get it. They may be infirmed and unable to grow it. They may be up on the 31st floor of a condo. Who knows what might prevent them from doing that? But the caregiver has been somewhat of a savior in this way, and maybe now might feel that they're going to be replaced in not too distant future. What happens to caregivers?
So thank you for asking that, Bethann. I think that this is a question that's on the minds of a lot of patients and caregivers statewide. I'd like to draw people's attention to the fact that that there are no provisions in the law that would prevent patients from growing their own medicine. There has been some confusion, but that's something that's been consistently important for my organization, is ensuring that nothing happens to infringe on patients' right to grow their own medicine.
So if you can still grow it.
Yes. And there's the phase out of caregivers doesn't take place until December 31st of 2018. So we'll have some time to see how the program is working, and perhaps to take further legislative action if that needs to be done. But I would also like to highlight that there is still a role for caregivers to play within within the confines of the law as passed. Caregivers will still be protected under the law and will still be able to help their patients to grow and process and use their medicine in the ways that work for them. And there's also a provision that states that this phase out of caregivers doesn't affect caregivers that are caretaking for minors or for adults that lack legal capacity or for caregivers that are operating on islands where there are not yet any functional dispensaries. So that should certainly help some patients.
Still, just to be really clear, it will mean that those caregivers can't be growing it in plot X and bringing it back to their clients.
After December 31st, 2018, yes.
Right.
But it's just a prohibition, a phase out of the cultivation off the premises. And so, again, the patients, as Raphael pointed out, can continue to grow for themselves at their homes. And there's other things that the caregiver can do for those patients.
Specifically?
I think, you know, if the patient is growing in their own home and they don't know how to
they can bring their expertise, of course, and do it right there.
And do it right there.
Right.
Sure.
Right.
Okay. We've got callers on the line. If you'd like to join us, 941-3689 is our number. If you're on Oahu, call that number. And from the neighbor islands, or if you're calling from someplace other than Hawaii, you can get to us at 877-941-3689. Going to Lanai, calling from Lanai. Hello.
Aloha.
There. Aloha.
I just had several. I think Lanai probably... this is not included as a dispensary due to transportation issues, airlines, boats. I'd ask about labeling of the products produced. Will the consumer, I'm sure there's 8 zillion administrative rules that have to be produced. And other things I'd wish you would address is the cost to both the business and to the state in developing this program. And I'll take the answers off the air.
All right. Thanks so much. All right. He's asking the question that a lot of people were asking about, is quality control. How do you make sure?
Well, the bill requires that the labs, that the Department of Health certify labs. So that's going to be another thing that the department is going to be working on over the interim. Labs will have to come into the state. That's another business opportunity for folks to do. And then hopefully the department will be able to certify these labs up to certain standards. In terms of labeling products, there's going to be labeling requirements, again, prescribed in the bill, how they can label, how producers are going to have to label so as not to, you know, attract children, but really provide the information that patients need. Cost to businesses and states, to the state, we appropriated $750,000 each year of this biennium, allowing the department to hire up to 5 FTEs so that they can implement...
Full-time
employees, yes, to implement the program. Cost to the businesses, there's going to be a $5,000 non-refundable application fee, as well as for each license approved, a $75,000 fee, and then a $50,000 annual renewal fee thereafter. So it does require some considerable cost as well as financial wherewithal for the businesses that are going to be applying. But that was by design because we want to make sure that these are going to be financially stable businesses.
And businesses with some long association in Hawaii.
Yes.
So whether that would be a holding company or some other business?
That's been in existence for at least 5 years or so. Yes. I mean, and again, those provisions are being pointed towards because we want to make sure that these are credible, legitimate businesses.
All right. Thank you so much for the call. If you'd like to join us, the phone lines are open. There are a couple more lines that you can get through on 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to John, calling us from Maui. Aloha, John. Thank you for your patience.
Hello. Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question regarding how the state plans on regulating and enforcing the laws. As far as I know, the Department of Health doesn't have an enforcement arm. Is that correct?
The Department of Health does take on certain enforcement tasks. The Department of Health has a role in regulating several other medical programs. The Department of Health takes part in the enforcement of standards for things like care homes and hospitals.
But we've also seen some real problems with that.
in the bill, the Department of Health is going to be tasked with inspections. So that's an enforcement piece. And we have in this bill numerous penalty provisions, criminal provisions that was put in there to ensure that we have a tightly regulated system. So we will still be relying upon the normal law enforcement entities out there. And if there is a dispensary that steps out of line, I'm sure that the attorney generals and the police will crack down as we expect them to.
Mm-hmm. There's a relatively robust list of ways that dispensaries could lose their licenses. Mm-hmm. And we anticipate that, a dispensary license will represent a tremendous amount of financial investment and investment of time and energy and resources. So my organization hopes that that there will be a tremendous amount of self-regulating and self-policing of and by dispensaries as well.
You brought up care homes, though, and we saw that there was an issue, and I don't mean to beat you over the head with this, but sure, trying to be able to get that information to people who are seeking care homes and sort of an inability on the Department of Health's part to be able to do that in a timely fashion. Do you have confidence that they're going to be able to really regulate this and that the industry itself will be self-policing?
Bethann, I do have confidence in this Department of Health. You know, in the 14 years that the program was with the Public Safety Department, they did not have a computer registry. We have a computer registry now. The Department of Health has taken this program over for a year, and they can tell us. And they're moving towards a seed-to-sale tracking system. They're moving towards being able to tag every plant, including plants that are being raised by in personal grows. But so I have faith that this department will be able to execute. Now, will it be rocky? Certainly. Will they have a short time span? Yes. But I believe with the resources that we've given to them and the very, very good people in the Department of Health and the very smart people in the governor's team, you know, Attorney General Douglas Chin, Department of Health Director Dr. Ginny Pressler, they're going to make sure that the rollout is going to be as tight as possible, because we are, as a state, very concerned about the Cole Memorandum and the federal government still retaining the right to enforce if there are any violations of their priorities. So, yes, I have faith in this Department of Health.
And what about the startup? Because you mentioned, you know, being able to tag plants and to know from seed to plant whose plant is coming from, the clones, all of it, so that you can trace all of them back and have them appropriately tracked. What about when you start up? How do you do that?
So one value of starting up with a smaller number of licenses, you know, because at one point this bill was contemplating 26. The value of starting smaller is that we can work with a smaller number of licensees and ensure that the rollout is smoother. And as each of these licensees come on board, remember the startup date is that they may dispense as early as July 15th, 2016. But suppose they are not ready to, then the department won't approve them to start dispensing. And so there is going to be, I think, internally a way to ensure that the rollout is going to be smooth, that we are able to get the lab testing up and running so that we can ensure a safe supply to the patients who are going to come into these dispensaries.
Mm-hmm. And if I might add to that, I know it sometimes feels like we're alone here in Hawaii, but we have a tremendous amount of experience and knowledge that we can learn from other states that have successfully had to implement these kinds of software systems and just the entire rollout of a dispensary system. So
who's your best role model?
That depends tremendously on who you ask. People have their own models that they like, but I know that the Department of Health has, in the past, they've been in contact with New Mexico and Minnesota, that are two models that are not wholly unlike the one in HB 321, and that have been working pretty well by most accounts.
For most people for the rest of us, those wouldn't necessarily be the first states that would come to mind. Do you think that we need to take better looks at those states and not necessarily some of the ones that in some cases keep hitting the headlines? I'm thinking about, Washington, and Oregon, and
I think so.
Colorado?
One issue is my organization really feels that we need to keep the focus on programs that are working successfully within a medical context. So there's a lot of attention being paid to states such as Washington, Colorado, and now Oregon, and the District of Columbia that have recreational marijuana, and that's a rollout that we can take some lessons from, but certainly is not necessarily
part of this conversation.
The same. Exactly. And the other one that we hear a lot of news about is in California. But California isn't regulated at the state level. And so we've really been trying to look to states that have programs that are working well, quietly getting patients the access to the medicine that they need without engendering a lot of federal interference or a lot of newsworthy headlines.
Dr. Webb, is there a state that you think that we should best model?
Colorado. I think they've done a very good job, and their dispensary system is good. They've tracked everything with tags so that nothing is lost. They've taken their time and set up the dispensaries well. And even after they okayed adult use, they preserve grow rights for patients. Anybody can grow 6 plants in Colorado, and that would be my favorite. I personally see no reason why this should ever have been criminalized, and anything that moves it forward is a good thing. I would like to backtrack. I don't think we answered the transportation question for the gentleman from Lanai'i, and I'm not sure how that is written. I do know that the Hawaii Supreme Court 2 summers ago decided that, yes, medical cannabis patients may transport their medicine inter-island within the state, but I don't know how it's written for the new rules for the dispensaries for people on Lanai'i, Molokai'i, places that will have no dispensaries at first.
All right. Well, let's ask Representative Awolani.
So
can they take it?
So we're explicit in this law that there shall be no inter-island transport of medical marijuana. We did clarify, though, that the transport between caregivers and patients on an island, between a patient who's picking something up from a dispensary, between a production center and a retail dispensing location, that those types of transportation are going to be protected. In the business context, that transportation is also going to have to be within the C2CL tracking system that's going to be established by the Department of Health and picked up by the licensees. We were conscious of the fact that inter-island transport triggers federal jurisdiction. So we wanted to be very clear that that wasn't going to be allowed in the state. And what we've done is for places like Lanai and Molokai is to ensure that personal grow is still allowed, as well as caregiver grow on those islands where there is going to be no dispensary location, that will be allowed to continue.
But to be clear, then, if somebody needs medical marijuana, they can take it themselves? Inter-island? I mean, not...
We are explicit in saying that there shall be no inter-island transport.
So what happens if somebody has to go from one island to another and they have to get medical marijuana?
They are going to have to get the medical marijuana.
Where they land,
in the county that they land in.
And that's going to be possible for them even if they are a resident of another island?
Yes, we don't have any limitations. Any patient anywhere in the state can go to any dispensary in the state on the islands where they're located.
So don't take this one with you. Get it when you get there. Okay. Tonight we're talking about medical marijuana dispensaries, what HB 321 means over the next little while as we approach the time when the dispensaries may well open in July of next year. And if you are using medical marijuana now and look at this bill, how are you assessing the wins and losses in it? Most people are looking at it as a reasonable win, especially after 15 years without one. But for you, is it going to be a problem to continue what you've been doing now? Or is life going to get a little bit better for you when dispensaries are open? How do you assess HB 321? Our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Buck calling us from Maui. Aloha, Buck. Welcome to Town Square.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi. My question's not legal, it's more practical. Is there going to be technical help for people who want to grow their own? Is there going to be some place or somebody that can help them. I understand, you know, like it's quite a science. I wouldn't know through personal experience, of course, mind you. But I understand it's quite a science. You got like the pH factors in the soil and the nitrogens and the sun and the water balance and all of this kind of stuff. It's not like you got to throw a bunch of seeds in a flower box and watch them sprout up into grade A buds.
No, this is horticulture and maybe needs a little bit of help too. Okay, good question, Buck. I would imagine that there might be places.
A job opportunity for, because there are people out there somewhere in this world that actually know how to do this sort of thing.
Well, that's what I was asking of Raphael. I mean, there must be people who know how to do this, who have been quiet consultants in a lot of ways. Will they be able to come out from the shadows too and be able to offer their services?
Yeah, well, so one thing that I'll say is I don't know that that has any real connection to this particular bill. There are I know of a few, but there are certainly some people that are trying to help other patients and caregivers to learn how to do this. I think there was a fellow on Oahu recently who held a sort of a seminar on growing your own medicine. But I think that there certainly needs to be better resources than there are, though there are some, and hopefully with dispensaries established, that will give people a meeting place, and maybe some of those resources can coalesce around those locations.
And maybe desensitize some of the stigma that some people may still feel.
And I think, Beth, I think, you know, a very savvy dispensary might, you know, offer classes as part of the retail services that they're providing, you know, value added. They're not just prohibited to selling marijuana products. They can do other things as part of their business. And certainly a legitimate dispensary system will bring all of these other potential opportunities into a setting where they're legitimate. And they have always been legitimate because we have a system that says people can personally grow. And if they have to be taught how to do that, then the dispensary becomes a place that they might be able to do that.
All right, we've got callers on the line. If you'd like to join us, call in 941-3689 if you're on Oahu and from the neighbor islands, or if you're listening to the live stream elsewhere, you can get to us at 877-941-3689. Going to Francis, calling us from Kapolei. Aloha, Francis. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. My question is, why didn't they look into the enforcement aspect of this bill? I mean, you know, sooner or later, there's going to be problems. Why didn't they do that?
We did take great attention to the enforcement actions in this bill. There are actually new criminal provisions, and that was something that we worked with law enforcement and the Attorney General's office. They were very clear that they wanted enforcement provisions, so we have those in there.
Mm-hmm. And if I could add, this bill is based around the recommendations of a task force report. Right. And that task force included many representatives of law enforcement. So it just is not accurate to say that enforcement wasn't considered in the making of this bill. I think some people would say that there was too much sway given to enforcement.
It just depends on your perspective.
Mm-hmm. I would also add that, you know, there's also a lot of attention paid to security requirements of the licensees. There's requirements about distances from schools. So there's a lot of detail in here that addresses enforcement concerns.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for the call. Going now to Sachi, calling us from Kona. Aloha, Sachi.
Hi there.
Hi there.
Can I just be angry for a second? I feel like I know for a fact that there was a 40,000-year-old mummy they found with marijuana in it. Birds eat seeds on the earth. We have receptors in our brain that without having those receptors, we wouldn't have ever used pot. I personally know, I'm almost 70 years old, I personally know lots and lots of people. I don't smoke pot, I don't like it, but I know lots of people who have over my lifetime, including lawyers and judges. And I'm just wondering, this appears to me to be just a way to, it's all about money. It's just money. I mean, we've lost touch with the fact that these seeds on this earth are here for we're terminal. You know, we're not going to be here very long. And to try and stop people from having things like marijuana for medicine and all these laws and rules and crap, it just aggravates me to no end. It's like, what is wrong with
us? But Saatchi, I mean, you must be a little less angry knowing that this bill was passed and people are going to have legitimate access to it through dispensaries in not too distant future.
Look at the cost you're talking about. Look at all the red tape and the costs. And I mean, people, when I was 19, people were throwing pot seeds in their backyard, and they had, my brother had a tree in his car and was hauled away to the police with a tree, a marijuana tree that was just growing. And what I'm trying to say is it's a plant. And once they start GMOing the marijuana plant and making the rules and you have to do this and that, and if you don't, we're going to arrest you. I mean, it's a plant.
Okay, we got it. It's okay. A plant, and we think we got your perspective. Thanks very much, Saatchi. If you'd like to call us, our phone number is 941-3689. If you're on Oahu or from the neighbor islands, 877-941-3689. Got a question about the medical marijuana dispensaries? We've got lots of folks here to answer them for you. Representative Della Albalotti is here. Also, Raphael Kennedy from the Drug Policy Forum. And Dr. Charlie Webb calling us, or he's on the line with us, from the Mom Clinic on the Big Island. Again, our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. You know, there's still this kind of periphery of angst over the fact that medical marijuana is maybe going to be the first step to having it legalized. And that's not a conversation that we're going to have tonight, because we've had that conversation many times and we'll continue to have that kind of conversation. But for understanding, part of what I asked you earlier in the show about how necessary this may be to people as a legitimate medicine, and whether or not we understand that societally, or whether we're still grappling with that as something that should be regulated as a medicine. And I mean, is that something that we still need some help with to get over that hump? Not necessarily in the legislature, where obviously you did that, but just generally, Raphael, in the great big world, do we understand the necessity for this as you see it for people who need medical marijuana?
I think that many people do understand the necessity of medical cannabis, and increasingly so. I think there's still a certain amount of stigma, and some of that has to do with, you know, there are other concerns that people have about cannabis. You know, even if you're protected from criminal prosecution, there you can be. Get sidelong glances from your neighbors, or worry that you'll get.
They're going to smell it.
Yeah, you know, and so there's still some stigmatization, and I think that people will, as it becomes more understood and more widespread and mainstream, knowledge about the medical benefits of medical cannabis will allow more patients to sort of come forward and come out of the shadows and show their friends and neighbors that they are a patient and that it works for them and helps them manage their pain or their multiple sclerosis or whatever as the case may be.
And that they're still viable members of the community.
Exactly.
And they're not, you know, people for whom
I think we need to fight the stigma that's been a part of people's experience for so long.
All right, let's go to Nitai calling us from the North Shore. Aloha, welcome to Town Square. Nitai, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can now. Thank you so much for your patience.
Can you hear me?
We can.
Okay, so Mike, I just wanted to congratulate the caller that called about talking about the seeds and how it's a plant. I understand that there's many plants that are also not allowed. But my other thing was going back to the stigma is, like, part of the law is keeping it a certain distance away from schools and this and that. And that is a big stigma with children. You know, if we're going to hide it from our children, then what are we saying to our community? It's not like pornography or prostitution or cigarettes or something like that. So we're going to continue the stigma by hiding it from children. And so why would we not open this discussion with them?
Well, that's a philosophical question, and certainly things that families have had to discuss when they have somebody in their family who may have to use medical marijuana. Do you feel that you know, somehow this is stigmatizing it even further when we talk to families where someone in the family may be using medical marijuana and they're trying to potentially not let a child know?
So I would say that we're not stigmatizing it even further because, right now there are no dispensaries within 750 feet of schools because there are no dispensaries at all. But I think that's true, and as a society we need to sort of to reckon with some of those questions. One thing that has been a big issue for me has been the role of medical cannabis and child protective services, which is something that we heard a lot, where patients saying, "I'm worried that my neighbors are going to call CPS, or I'm worried that my medical use of marijuana will interfere with my ability to get visitation with my children."
Or even keep your child.
Yeah. And so the during this legislative session, another bill was passed with much less fanfare, that was Senate Bill 1291, that gives certain protections against discrimination in those kinds of contexts to medical marijuana patients.
Including in condos and associations.
Mm-hmm. And we'll have to see yet how effective those protections turn out to be. But I think that's certainly an important question to a lot of medical marijuana patients that are raising children. And I was really happy to see the legislature taking those steps to address those questions.
And I think that's going to be something that we grapple with for years to come, because I think there is a commitment to ensure that people who are legitimately taking this as medicine should not be penalized. I think there is really that commitment, but how we roll that out, how we get that implemented, and how that interfaces with all of our other employment protections, discrimination laws, we want to be deliberate about that. I know it's probably a long time coming for many of those patients, but that's the best that we can do at this moment. And I think that, for my part, there is a commitment to ensure that we don't have that kind of discrimination.
Thanks very much for the call. Going now to Bob, calling us from Kona. Aloha, Bob. Welcome to Town Square.
Yes. So I'm
Bob, hang on a second, because we're having a really difficult time hearing you. Could you please turn down your radio so we can hear just you?
Okay.
There we go.
I question these rules about the dispensaries. If you want to apply, you have to put up $25,000 unrefundable deposit, but then decide that.
No. Hang on. I don't think those are the correct amounts. You have to, not for the deposit, but to be able to just generate it, the registration. Isn't it $5,000?
The bill changed it to $5,000 non-refundable application fee.
Right. And then afterward, when you're actually getting a permit, you're going to have to pony up $75,000, and then for the next year, $50,000, and
correct,
every year after that.
Correct.
And then you've got to pay a certain percentage of the gross income from the place.
No, that's not in the bill any longer.
That's not in it any longer? Oh, so I don't know. Where do you get a copy of the new bill?
Go online. There are lots of places you can get it. You can get it through drug policy forums, a website. We'll also put it up on our Facebook page, which is Hawaii Conversation. And you can also look on the Department of Health there, or go to the website for the legislature and look in the archives. You can get it. Just make sure you get the latest bill, the one that was actually passed.
I will. But the $5,000, it's a $5,000 non-refundable deposit to decide for them to review your application. Is that what it is?
Yep. Yes, it's a $5,000 non-refundable application fee.
So where do they come off of asking something like that? I mean, there's just that much money. All this money is means that they're trying to put people without, they want to give it to people that can afford to take over the whole business here.
Or to ensure that you actually have a viable business concern that's able to deliver product appropriately to people who need it.
By taking their money before they give them the license, that's the way to prove that they're viable? That doesn't sound ethical to me. So.
Well, when you make application to college, they ask you for a fee right off the bat before you ever even accepted.
Yeah, I know. They say they ask a lot of that stuff, but nothing like $5,000 or something like that. You know, or if if you get accepted, it comes off of something else, you know.
Quite true. All right, so Della Abelotti, how did you come up with a structure for the application fee and for the permit fee?
Sure. We looked at what other states are doing across the country, and we wanted to be reasonable, but we also wanted to ensure that these are legitimate businesses that are going to have the financial resources. And these 8 licenses on the islands are going to have – I mean, they're going to have a huge, tremendous responsibility. They're going to be subject to scrutiny. They're going to be looked at from all sorts of folks, the Department of Health, state and local law enforcement. There's going to be scrutiny, so we wanted to ensure that they're going to be a solid applicant.
All right, we're going to take another caller. If you'd like to join us, 941-3689 from Oahu, or 877-941-3689. Got a question about the medical marijuana dispensary bill? Now's the time to ask. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Corinne, calling from Haiku. Aloha. Welcome to Town Square.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead.
Yes, there was a caller a couple of beats ago that was talking about plants. That is just a plant. Well, digitalis is just a plant.
Right, foxglove.
Yes, foxglove. And it doesn't mean that everybody should take digitalis. The thing here is that people with legitimate concerns that have a big background in herbology, I studied with a Chinese acupuncturist for years, and understand the difference between concern and stigmatizing people. And I'm all for not throwing people in jail over this, but we do not have a culture that knows how to take little amounts of anything, nor do we have a culture that understands the body and health and herbs and dosage. And we have made marijuana so strong. And the Chinese acupuncturist I studied with said anything can be made into a medicine, but as far as general public using it for entertainment purposes, he said it can be very dangerous because things that it makes us feel good, alcohol or whatever, do have a toxic level. And we have made marijuana very, very strong.
Okay, Corinne, and I want to stop you right there and get Dr. Webb to come in into this conversation because this kind of conversation has happened around a great many things, and the charge
right.
that Americans are such that, you know, if a little bit is good, well, then a little bit more is even better, and maybe you need even more after that. Dr. Webb, how do you feel when you hear conversations like, you know, what we've just been having with Corinne?
Well, I have to agree that is the American ethic in many ways, because people came here because it was a land of plenty, so we've built our country that way. But on the other hand, the fact is that if you use the medicine responsibly, you can titrate your own dose. The fact that it's in a higher concentration just means that you use less. For example, where there are dispensaries, they have these wonderful vapor pens. It looks like an ink pen. It's modeled on an e-cigarette. There's no smoke. There's no smell. There's no harshness. If you have a severe pain, you can pick up that vapor pen and take one puff on it, and you wait 1 minute and see if you have relief. If you don't, then you can do a second puff, and you can get it to exactly where you get relief. And they've done studies in Montreal that show that you can get pain relief from even nerve pain at half the blood levels of cannabinoids that would get a person, quote-unquote, high. So you really don't need a large dose. She's absolutely correct in that. The low doses seem to work very well.
Thank you, Dr. Webb. I'm going to take another call. Mia calling us from Kauai. Aloha, Mia. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. Thank you so much for having my call. I'm curious if you could please, some of the panel there could address the reasoning behind, basically, it seems to me any business person that can come up with a business plan and funds could open a dispensary, whereas you have drugs, some very simple drugs like decongestants or antacids, for example, that can be required to have a pharmacist sell them only. So I'm wondering if there's a plan in there to have a physician or a pharmacist even to be involved with the medical dispensaries of cannabis in the works.
You're really asking a quality control question, are you not?
Oh, not just quality control, but, you know, that there's some oversight of patient care as well.
Okay, so two different parts of that. One, making sure that there is quality control, but she's also saying, shouldn't there be a healthcare professional involved with this at the business level? Is that necessary?
Yeah, at one point in this bill, there was a requirement that there be a health provider involved. And I cannot – I'd have to go back and look more carefully if we actually require that now. And I'm getting the no head nod.
My understanding is that the current bill does not have such a requirement. I think it's worth recognizing, first of all, that prescription authority is a relatively complicated issue that has a lot to do with federal guidelines. And since medical marijuana is not recognized on the federal level yet, there's not a way to have medical marijuana as a part of the existing system of pharmacies. I think that the idea of having a certain amount of medical oversight in dispensaries is a good one. The problem is, I think we don't want to create a system that where only doctors would have to be learning how to essentially become commercial farmers of a particularly finicky crop. You know, what we want is a system where people are able to do the things that they know how to do well. And the fact is that pharmacies are businesses, and while you do have to have a pharmacist associated with one, Long's isn't fundamentally a medical institution.
They're also not producing it. They're just the conduit.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a little different situation when you're talking about a dispensary that is also going to be the production element.
That's certainly true.
And I think the regulation we have around ensuring consistency, lack of contaminations, we do require the Department of Health, again, to set up laboratories, certify laboratories. So that is providing the kind of, I guess, the safeguard that the caller from Kauai was asking for, you know.
At least the quality control part of it.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Dr. Webb, jump in here.
Yeah. Well, I have an unrelated question. Is post-traumatic stress disorder being added as a qualifying condition? And if so, I would applaud that.
Yes, that remained in the bill.
Wonderful. You know, because currently we have to turn people down for that, and it's very effective for getting rid of nightmares and letting people sleep through the night. And
right, but
that's going to be very helpful.
But let's be clear about that. That's the correlation between insomnia and PTSD, but insomnia just as such, wasn't that removed?
Insomnia was removed as well as general anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Right. But in many people, the insomnia is due to nightmares and PTSD. And nightmares are extremely difficult to treat. The only thing I know that does work is cannabis.
Well, Dr. Webb, I want to thank you for spending the last hour with us on Town Square tonight. We appreciate your time. We are coming to the very end of the hour very quickly. Is there a final word that you would like to leave us with?
I'm just very happy that things are moving forward in a civilized fashion, and I look forward to the day when this medicine is readily available to anybody who needs it.
All right. Thank you so much, Raphael Kennedy from Drug Policy Forum.
I think we too are so enthusiastic that that we're this close to seeing patients get the safe and legal access to the medicine that they need.
Just wait till we see you next summer, perhaps. And Representative Del Albalade.
I really want to thank the patients who have been so patient for so long, as well as the Department of Health with the tremendous work that they have ahead of them.
Well, I thank all of you for joining us tonight, and for those of you who tuned in and called, I will see you tomorrow morning for the conversation right here at 8 o'clock. In the meantime, have a good evening. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Aloha.